Before I start my talk this morning, I'm going to talk. I just want to present a few little anecdotes from Sawaki Koto Roshi, who was considered one of the leading teachers in the generation of Sakya Roshi in Japan. It was called Homeless Koto, because he didn't have his own temple, and he was a wandering monk, sort of. And he was the teacher of Uchiyama Roshi, who wrote many books on Zen, which you're familiar with. So Uchiyama Roshi likes to talk about Sawaki Roshi's some things that he says, but here are some things that he says that just to warm us up. He says, "We don't practice for the sake of gaining satori. Satori is like an enlightenment experience. Rather, we practice being fooled around by satori." I won't explain that. He says, "Being glared at by Zazen, being scolded by Zazen, being obstructed by Zazen, being pulled around by Zazen, weeping our whole life away, this has got to be the happiest way of life." You can all go home now. He says, "What is the use of doing Zazen? Zazen is good for nothing. Unless you hear more than enough of that and just do what is good for nothing wholeheartedly, your practice is really good for nothing." I'll read that again, just in case. "What is the use of doing Zazen? Zazen is good for nothing. Unless you hear more than enough of that and you just do what is good for nothing wholeheartedly, your practice is really good for nothing." He says, "Sky and earth make offerings. Air, water, plants, animals, human beings, all make offerings. Every being makes offerings to each other. We only live within this relationship of making offerings. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're grateful." And then he says, "Satori is not going to a lot of trouble to reach some special place. It's just being natural." Satori is like a thief entering an empty house. There's nothing to steal. There's no need to escape. No one's coming running to catch you. So there's no inducement. Well, these are some nice sayings that kind of characterize his teaching. So we've been studying or unfolding the teaching of what's called light in Soto Zen, history of Soto Zen teaching. And I've been talking about various readings and studying various teachers, how they express that. But we have to be very careful when we speak about sitting in the center of light and expressing light and so forth, talking about blissful state, that we don't try to create something like a blissful state of mind. That we, it's when Master Hong Zhi was teaching in China, he promoted what he called the silent illumination Zen. That sitting in Zazen is silent illumination. His friend, Rinzai Master Da Hui, criticized silent illumination Zen. He promoted koan Zen. And I think his criticisms are somewhat valid. And we should be careful to pay attention to his criticisms, because he said, Soto Zen, silent illumination is just like rice bags, or dead trees sitting in a certain position. So, we should be very careful not to seek something that some ecstatic practice, actually. Silent illumination can seem like a kind of ecstatic practice. Suzuki Roshi always warned us about seeking ecstatic practice, or trying to create some kind of ecstasy through our practice, through Zazen. So this is kind of like where we have to be careful, that we're really not seeking something. If ecstasy arises, that's just ecstasy. If a painful state of mind arises, that's just painful state of mind. But they're equal. We just relate to them equally, instead of preferring one over the other. This is called, if we prefer one over the other, this is called falling into preference. The beginning of the Xin Qin Ming, the third ancestor, says, everything's fine until you fall into preference. Don't fall into preference. True Zazen is not falling into preference or trying to achieve something or some special state of mind. All the ancestors emphasize this. So we should be careful, because it looks like when we're talking about illumination and so forth, that we're talking about some special state of mind, which is not so. When I was in my 20s, and I was inspired by the Hasidic tales and so forth, and I would fall into ecstatic states of mind, because ecstasy was one of their practices. I would fall into ecstatic states, but they were not sustainable because I didn't have a practice. And even if I did have, there was no way to sustain that in a practical way. When I discovered our Zen practice, our Suzuki Roshi's practice, where he said, if you sit Zazen, you will sit Zazen. That's all. Don't expect anything. Don't try to create something. Don't make a preference. And this is exactly what I needed. It's not that I put out my light they said that the light was sublimated into activity. This is our actual practice. When we sit zazen, it's like lighting a match in a closet where the whole closet is illuminated just by lighting a match. But when you go out into the world and light a match, if I were to light a match now, I'd say, what's that? You wouldn't see it. This is called secret practice. You hide your light within your activity. You don't go around saying, I'm enlightened, or I have something wonderful. Suzuki Roshi always emphasized practice. You know, we say, Dogen says, practice is enlightenment, and enlightenment is practice. Within practice is enlightenment, and within enlightenment is practice. They don't exist separately. Most people want enlightenment, but they have no idea of practice. And so Dogen is always warning us about this. Without practice, enlightenment doesn't manifest, even though it's our nature. In the Sando Kai, the end of the Sangha, Sando Kai Sikito says, just practice like a fool or an idiot. Just practice like as if a fool or an idiot. When we come to the Zendo, we light a match which illuminates the whole cosmos. When we go out into the world, the light is sublimated through our activity, so it doesn't look like that. It simply looks like activity. So I want to explain a little bit about how we, the mechanics of that. The other day I was talking about equality and differentiation. Someone said, you're always talking about equality. You know, if you say that you treat everyone equally, and but if I treat everyone equally, well, what about my wife and what about my friends? And, you know, like, I don't, some people I treat this way and some people I treat that way. What is this equality? I don't quite understand how we should treat everything equally. So I want to kind of explain that. And explain something about how that filters into our activity. The way our mind works, the way our memory works, is that whatever we do plants a seed. And so when we have good our activities are on the good side, the good seeds are planted, and then when the conditions are right, they sprout. So when we do good things follow. When we do bad things follow. This is very simplistic. And then we have what we call a self or an ego, consciousness, which is kind of false because it's not what we think it is. And then we have a consciousness which simply discriminates between the senses. And then we have the consciousnesses which are seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. So through these consciousnesses, we perceive the world. This is how we perceive the world. It's very limited. It's very, when we see a centipede walking, we say, well, that centipede lives in a very small world, limited world. But actually, we're just like that centipede. We live in a very limited world too, even though we think that we have the capacity to live in an unlimited world. But we live in a very limited world, according to what we see, think, feel, and so forth. So, when we receive the information through our senses, it's distributed and made sense of through our consciousness. And then it's this information is delivered to our mind, which is called Alaya, which is where all the seeds of our activities are planted. And then our habits, our habitual activity is processed and acted out according to our good and bad deeds. So this is called living in the world of samsara, the world of simply birth and death, acting out within this very limited sphere. I don't know if you get me, but so when one is enlightened, it's called turning those consciousnesses around so that they are not just consciousness, they're wisdom. So the wisdom of the consciousness which has the seeds is called the mirror wisdom. The mirror wisdom sees everything just as it is, without interfering. There's no, it's simply seeing as is, which is so uncommon, because we always see things filtered through our imagination. So this is simply seeing clearly without creating a picture of imagination. Called seeing as it is. And then the ego consciousness, which always sees things in relation to itself, always measures everything in relation to itself, as good and bad, right and wrong, and so forth. Want and dislike and dislike, it's the dualistic consciousness. That dualistic consciousness sees the equality of all things. That's the wisdom of equality. And then the consciousness which differentiates between the various sense consciousnesses, when it becomes the wisdom which sees all the differences, the wisdom of differentiation, it understands and sees each thing as it exists separately. So the wisdom of equality is horizontal. We're all the same. The wisdom of differentiation sees everything vertically. We're all different. So difference and sameness. Santokai means the difference of the oneness of difference and sameness. The unity of difference and sameness. So where equality and differentiation meet in each moment is where we live. That cross there, that crossing, is where the round mirror lives. And our actions, which are involved with our sensory apparatus, instead of simply being expressed through our ego, is expressed through our wisdom. So our actions are have the foundation of wisdom instead of the foundation of ego. Because ego has been transformed. Does that make sense? Ego has been transformed into wisdom. So it's no longer called ego or consciousness. It's called wisdom. So when our ecstatic state, which is or our blissful state of mind, it is there in Zazen, we don't stay there. We allow that to be expressed through our activity, and so it becomes diffused. You don't see it. You only can be it. And so this is the process by which the bliss of practice becomes diffused into ordinary activity. This is how we meet life and spread the Dharma. Without trying to spread the Dharma, we simply act in an enlightened way. Suzuki Roshi used to say, don't try to express the Dharma when you leave the Zendo. Just sit Zazen and go out and live your life. Just by being present with people, the Dharma will be spread. You don't have to do something special. Andrea was talking in her talk yesterday. She said, talked about this, where she worked, in the hospital, and the person asked her, said something to her about, you're different. There's something about you that's different. And it was like, in response to her way of responding in a way that was unusual, but natural and normal to her. So the important thing, and this is called Jijuyo Samadhi, the samadhi of self, joyous samadhi, self-fulfilling samadhi, which is offered to others. By transforming our ordinary consciousness into ordinary wisdom consciousness, the Dharma is transmitted without doing anything special through our ordinary activity. But Zazen is also ordinary activity. So these are just two sides of ordinary activity. But there are two sides. One is our own self-fulfillment. And then the other is offering that through our ordinary activity, daily activity. Because ego, instead of offering ego, we're offering wisdom. So if do you have any questions about that?
I am a little wondering about imagination. So I just want to check this, run this by you. I understand the piece about if imagination is through kind of ego's perceptual story making, but that too could be expressed in natural activity as wisdom, right?
Yes.
Just spontaneously problem solving or using imagination without ego.
Yes. Yeah, as long as imagination is in the service of wisdom instead of just being in the service of ego. So, the quality of wisdom is that there's always serving as Buddha and not just serving as ego. Although, if ego is serving Buddha, that's actually the problem, because we don't get rid of ego. We don't get rid of ego in the usual way. Ego is, we offer ego up. What the process is offering ego up to Buddha. And that's the transformation, that ego becomes absorbed into Buddha. And so we have ego, and our personality is ego and Buddha. And ego wants to lead. And then when there's consciousness of Buddha, then, well, the ego says, oh, well, can you lead? And then ego says, wait a minute. What are you taking me?
I have a question. I feel that for a long time I've taken the idea of not, positive, ecstasy appears, it's just ecstasy. Mm-hmm. Bad state appears, it's just a bad state. I think that it's turned out, what I've discovered fairly recently, is it's actually helpful to give the positive states some attention and nourishment, mm-hmm. instead of treating them as, oh, here it comes, it goes, that creates a more wholesome balance in me, and to actually discover, I'm not talking about like thrills, like the thrill of, being on a, I'm talking more about, the feeling of, connection to people, the feelings of gratitude, the feelings of appreciation, that when I make a conscious effort to encourage those feelings, that's good for me.
Yes, that's good. So there are two levels. Yeah. One is the relative level, and the other is the absolute level. So you have to, know what we're talking about. When we say the equal, that's on the absolute level. There's no good and bad, no right and wrong. That's on the absolute level, which is the level of truth, of absolute truth. The level of relative truth is that there's good and bad, right and wrong. So, yes. But when we're sitting in Zazen, we're sitting in the absolute truth. When we're acting out in the world, we're putting emphasis on the relative truth. So that you don't kill people, you don't steal, you take care of yourself, and you put emphasis on cultivating good states of mind.
I guess what my experience has been is that the absolute is kind of appearing in these relative states. Like gratitude is an expression, it's the activity. Like when we're on Sesshin for many, many days towards the end, we just want to keep thanking everybody. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what I'm, but that it also seems that you can start at the relative level, so, and nourish gratitude, and that gives you a
Well, this is what I've been talking about.
Okay.
The absolute, you know, so-called absolute, the ultimate level is informing the relative level. And that's coming through your fingertips. That's shooting up through your fingertips as good state, as gratitude. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. So, this is natural precept, not imposed precept from the outside. It's natural precept from the inside. Because you're going in accord with the Tao.
I was wondering about nature and about ego, so related. You were talking about preference and going beyond preference. It seems like preference is also part of nature in some way, right?
Yes.
Like trees want light, etc. This is related to that. So I was just wondering about ego. It seems like ego is also natural, as you said. And the problem that I have in Zazen is that I realize I don't actually accept my ego enough. So I don't like my ego, so I use Zazen to fight my ego.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm sitting in Zazen, I think that's my ego, and I go off and I don't actually sit Shikantaza or whatever. I just ego. And then I say, no, Zazen, and Zazen comes in, and I have this constant fight. And it's really, really unpleasant.
This is what Sawaki Kono said, being pulled around by Zazen.
Yeah. but then if I really sit Zazen, then it's because it's more pleasant, so then that's my preference. So then I create preference.
That's right. Pleasant is always preferable. For most people.
So I should let my ego win, because it's more unpleasant.
It will win no matter what you do.
So what do we do about this?
Don't think about it. Zazen teaches us about this. So you have to listen to Zazen, because it will teach you all about it if you simply sit without moving. How can I do that? That's the big question. Not what is this, or why, or why, me go, you don't think about all these things. You know, they're just past, that's just the scenery. Just, how can I sit with all this pain without having it dominate me? But who is it dominating? It's your ego. Your ego, you don't have to think about your ego. Because it's always there. Until suddenly it drops away. So, not suddenly, but somehow. Geez, I'm doing this. And then your ego drops up again. But just let it be, you know. But Zazen will, if you continue to sit, Zazen will teach you everything you need to know. Just by sitting there and letting everything come and go. And if you let everything come and go, all that stuff that's passing through your mind will enlighten you.
Sure, I don't know how to word this, but who's saying all this? What you're saying? Like, who? What is it that's seeing absolute versus ego, mind?
What and who? See, that question wants to identify a seer. Or, which looks like you.
You have one of me?
That idea was just so limited. You know, I just totally limited to relating what we, our imagination to to the limited understanding we have of what we have, of who we are. So it's the what's seeing, it's the who's seeing, it's the what's feeling. As soon as you name it, that's not what it is.
Is that why the form and sitting is so important? Because it's not really...
There's nobody there.
There's nobody there, right. So we're sitting because there's nobody there.
We're sitting to let go of whoever's there. And then, whoever's there will be there. So, ego is a perceived sense of self, which doesn't really exist. It's just a confection, like a cake. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of form, a little bit of perception, a little bit of consciousness, a little bit of, and then you mix it all up and say, I am me. So that's a confection, something concocted, but we take it as real. And it reveals, God, this is real. Yeah, that's true too. That's also true. But it's only real for now. But your real self, your true self, has no special shape or form or identification. You can see it. I mean, you can be it, but you can't see it. As soon as you try to see it, meaning give it a shape or a form or a who, or a who am I yet, you try to limit it. So you're trying to limit something that's unlimited. And that's what we're doing all the time. We're trying to limit something that's unlimited. Because we feel this sense of self. If this sense of self is unlimited, then we lose it. And we're always afraid of losing it. And we live our whole life afraid of losing it. Right? But to lose it is to gain it, unfortunately.
This is where form is emptiness and emptiness is form.
Yes. Yeah, this form is empty of its own being. Own being means inherent existence.
So you can cross me off, don't decide.
It's time, right?